Are you a business owner looking for real advice and input? You're in the right place. From concept to launch to growth, funding, and beyond. Welcome to Startup Hustle with your hosts. One once sold a business for $150 million. The other, the author of Million Dollar Bedroom. Here are your hosts of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson.
And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Mike Meyer, who will be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Hi, Mike.
How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, man?
I'm good. Things have been busy, but rolling. Excited. Yeah,
literally rolling. We'll talk about that and why it's rolling. But you and I are going to talk about some stuff that we have been around for a very long time. You more so than me. And it's been quite a while since I've been around it. But we're going to talk about music retail.
Yeah.
And what the hell happened.
That fun thing that everybody wants to get into until they realize how hard it is.
Yeah, maybe. That's almost kind of like the modern day, like dispensary.
Yeah.
People are like, yeah, I've always wanted to do that. And you're like, oh, wait, it's work.
Yeah.
So to give a little background, you are the guy at Meyer Music.
Well, I am one of the guys at Meyer Music. I'm actually part of a family of five, six actually, one not in the business, but there's five of us in the business. So family business, three locations here around the city and have been doing it for 54 years. I'm 52. So as long as I've been alive, but my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, and I all work together. So
right.
Kind of tackled it as a team.
And you mentioned the city, that city being Kansas City. And then what the heck does that have to do with me? Well, I worked in the musical instrument business for a long time.
Long time.
Yeah. And I have a book coming out about being a musician, even though I'm not a musician, but it's about the business of music. And, you know, what you see on stage is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. It's a great book, by the way. I started reading
it. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot you have one of the early copies.
I do.
That's right.
I do.
You have the one with errors in it.
Hopefully,
if you're listening, hopefully the one you buy doesn't have any errors in it by the time you get it. But so music retail and the music industry have changed a lot. I mean, I think that's just fair to say.
Absolutely.
So when we're talking about music retail, we're gonna lump in the good old music store.
Right.
And for those that are 25 and listening, they're going, what's that?
Right. Like, they've never seen the place that sells records.
Well, that's funny because I'm a little bit older than my wife. And I was once many years ago telling her a story about listening to 45s on my Bee Gees record player. And she goes, how old are you really?
Yeah.
Because she had never listened to an actual record.
Yeah.
She cassettes and barely, and then CDs.
I had an employee of mine who was several years back as a teenager in high school. And she said, you know, I was looking through, this was in the CD era. And she said, I was looking through my parents' house and I found these things. I don't know. I think they're called 49s or something.
45s.
They look like platters, you know? And I said, yeah, you've never seen a 45, but the reality is they haven't. And there's a reason why, you know, changed.
Well, technology's changed with that. And so, as far as music retail goes, that, you know, we used to have actual music stores where we would go buy God knows what. Now they just call them vintage, where you can actually buy vinyl records. We had CDs, we had cassettes, they had all of that. And now they have no more of that. Why? Technology. And it's honestly better.
Yeah.
Because I can listen to more music, I can do it cheaper, and I don't have to go to a store, look through bins, stuff like that. Now, with that, you've also got musical instrument stores, and that's a business you're in.
Right, right.
So that's going to cover, we'll use industry terms like MI,
which
is musical instruments,
yeah.
PO, pianos and organs, and then B&O, band and orchestra.
Right.
So a lot of people grew up playing instruments.
And then print, you've got that one in there too.
Man, that's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Is that even still around?
It is. I mean, they've adapted and they're adapting slowly.
Yeah.
We always say the music industry is several years behind the real industries, but yeah, they've adapted. They now have it where we can download specific pieces. We're kind of in a weird space because people still want to come in and they want to look at the piece of music because they got to figure out how hard it is.
Yeah.
Can I even play this? But it's really cool to be able to print it out and say, hey, whatever key you want, we can do it. So they have adapted some. It's still a tough place to live, but they've adapted some.
I once worked for a chain of musical instrument stores that once we consolidated all the stores together, the management decided that all of the SKUs that we had for the sheet music were not worth keeping up with. And we sold off all of the sheet music by the pound.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of dealers do that. There's a guy in Chicago. It's like he had an all you can carry sale to get rid of some of it.
Yeah. Just come and get it. So
it's tough. And it's got a real short shelf life too.
So, so we've seen this huge change in music. And when we get back to actual music itself, obviously digital delivery, you have things like iTunes, all the streaming services and stuff like that has dramatically changed the output and the way that musicians make money.
Right.
And for those of you that aren't aware, the musical instrument business has gone through, well, to say dramatic changes, maybe not even strong enough.
Crazy.
So I used to work for Roland, and Roland's the world's largest manufacturer of electronic musical instruments. They're actually, which does like $4 or $5 billion a year in sales, and they're not even the biggest company. That's Yamaha.
Yeah.
So Yamaha makes it all, but so it's been over a decade since I've worked in that industry, but I used to work in the piano and keyboard world.
Right.
And since I've left, about 70% of those stores have gone out of business.
It's crazy. Well, that's where I started, was in pianos and organs. My mother was big, and she's got a master's degree in piano. And so
and most people that ran a music store did start there.
They did, yeah.
People actually used to play that.
It was great training because it's a hard sell. I mean, it's a luxury item. It's a high dollar. It's like you got to really work. You got to know what you're doing. And it's not about how great you can play it. You got to sell it. So, but boy, have they seen a real change in what people think is important in their home.
Yep.
The square footage they're going to allot to that, you know, the amount of money they want to invest up front to see if their kids will do it, you know, so big, big changes there.
And much like the standard recording industry changed, digitization changed the piano.
It really did.
And why? Well, dude, a piano is big.
Yeah.
Freaking heavy. Also, people move a lot more. We live in a lot more apartments and closed quarters. It's hard to just like be sitting there and rocking your piano at like 11:30 at night in a tiny apartment.
Absolutely.
If you could even get the piano in there.
And those electronic companies spend a lot of time and energy digitizing the sound, getting it good, getting the feel and the touch. So when you hit that key, it sounds like what you get out of that old acoustic piano that had 8,000 parts. This thing's got, you know, 500 parts and weighs 1/10 the weight. So it's kind of funny because the music, the piano industry, Yamaha, all of them are, they've created this monster that's really put pressure on the other side of their business, which is that acoustic, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like the
guitar business.
By acoustic,
we mean like your traditional piano, like a grand piano or an upright piano, one that actually has strings.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that people don't know about a piano is it's actually a percussion instrument.
Yeah, it is.
It has hammers. It hits strings. Yeah. There you go, people. You are that much smarter.
You have just learned one thing from this.
And that's probably all you'll learn other than a bunch of old people saying, things were only like they used to be.
But that's right.
You can go wow someone with your knowledge, win a bet, win a drink, do something.
Yep.
But it is true.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things when I worked for Roland, and, you know, Roland's a really innovative and interesting company. You know, Roland's founder, Ikutaro Kakahashi, was a watchmaker.
Yeah.
And he invented MIDI, M-I-D-I, musical instrument digital interface.
Yeah.
And then then open sourced it and gave it to the world. And like one of the coolest moves in music technology history. So one thing people don't know is when you were playing like the old school Nintendo and Mario was jumping and like bouncing coins and popping off turtles and stuff like that, those were Roland's MIDI sounds.
Really?
Yeah. That was some of their original licensing. So,
that's crazy.
Yeah. And you were talking about a digital instrument sounding like the real thing. Well, when I went out to Roland, I thought it was one of the coolest things. Like they actually had a grand piano and they had this like robot thing and it was hitting it like in 100 levels of force.
Sure.
And it was recording an actual instrument.
Yeah. That's the technology innovations they did. They basically sat there and it's at every different strike level that your finger could hit that key. They recorded it and that's what you're hearing played back. I love MIDI and then General MIDI was the software standard that came along. MIDI was the hardware standard.
He's not a military leader?
You know, no, he should be, but it's I'm glad I learned that early because I'll tell you what, that really, learning that piece of it was very transformative for me, getting me to open my eyes to technology in music instruments. changed the whole game for me down the road in opening my eyes to technology that was going to help move my business forward. So right. where a lot of people were afraid of it, I wasn't afraid of it. That's how I grew up. I sat in the basement listening to Eddie Van Halen and try and, you know, mimic jump on the little, ours was Kauai. We did Kauai, which nobody's ever heard of probably too much, but you know, they had one of the first synthesizers out and, really changed the game for us young people who looked at technology and learning music in that way, as opposed to those that just learned it on acoustic piano with the old nun sitting there with the, you know, ruler slapping your fingers. You
well, that made it difficult. And, you know, the size of some of this stuff and yeah. your inability to do different things. And, you know, like one of Roland's first really innovative and still popular digital instruments was the 808.
Yeah.
Making synthesizing, or the whole hip hop industry will swear. By
oh,
the
sure.
808. They're like, oh man, I want an 808. That's where it started.
But sure. And the Yamaha was DX7,
that,
you know?
Yeah, that was the ability to like have a whole entire drum kit on your lap.
Yeah. And for me,
and do just different stuff with it. And like, I'm a terrible drummer, but I can rock either one of those instruments we just named.
Absolutely. And for those of us, you know, the dorky kid that played the piano growing up, that was me. I could now play a keyboard and make it sound like an electric guitar yeah. and shred like Jimi Hendrix on
oh, yeah.
it. So,
or just hit a button and be like,
there you go.
Just do whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you needed to do.
Yeah.
And it kept perfect time.
Absolutely.
And you could plug it into things like a computer.
Absolutely.
Which turned out to not be a fad after all.
No, it really didn't. I mean, I think that's the crossover that never really happened in that.
I'm still waiting for the fad of the personal computer to fade out.
Yeah.
But, you know, 20, 30 years ago, as capable as MIDI and other things were, it was very difficult. You still couldn't really, it was still a bit of a challenge to plug in. But now anything, I mean, shit. Anything and everything.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because you can get a lot more interactivity and a lot of stuff like that. Okay. So we just defined what music retail was. Well, what killed the actual recording was, I mean, no one wanted to go down to the store. I wanted to be able right. to have like a gajillion songs in my phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I was very resistant to signing up for streaming.
Wow.
Because I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
Like that.
You
know, I wanted to own the masters or something like,
yeah.
but yeah, now it's like, I mean, it's crazy. So,
well, and you also think about like how Napster came in
oh,
and
yeah.
just totally,
I hadn't even thought about them. That.
That's to me, that was the beginning and the end. There's a really great series that I watched.
The Defiant Ones.
The Defiant Ones is one.
Where Dr. Dre or whoever it was, no, it's Jimmy Iovine. Yeah. He saw Napster. He's like, guys, this is it.
We're over.
We're done.
We're dead. Putting that genie back in the bottle. The other one that's really, really solid that if you haven't seen is Artifact. Hmm. What is it? 30 Seconds from Mars. It's a great, great documentary about the changing music industry and how those guys used to make their money on albums and get big advances and all this stuff. And then it changed. And now all of the artists in the industry, those touring artists, they're not making their money in selling those downloads. Their money's made in touring.
Yeah.
Now the record companies had to get smart and they have what are called 360 deals with these guys. So the record company's taking a piece of the touring and everything, and that never was part of the deal before. They were promotion of the record. So they had to really adapt and change, or you know, the record company was gonna disappear as we see it. You know?
Well, you used to go tour so you could sell records.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that wasn't the big component. Now, you know, and that's one of the things. So in my upcoming book, The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career, I'm not a musician.
Yeah.
I'm a hack.
Yeah.
I'm not good. I mean, I'm okay. I'm exactly.
You play the radio well. Is that what you're saying?
No, like my album. Well, my co-author, Joel Cummins from Humphreys McGee, they are amazing live performers. They actually one of their first albums was titled Local Band Does Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would actually be perfect. That would be my actual album.
Yeah.
I would have been just okay.
Yeah.
I learned very quickly after watching those guys that I had no career.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to happen.
You look like you've landed on your feet. I think you did okay.
I've done okay. But so with that, I brought some of the angle of the musical instrument. You know, so what you see on stage is the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
So much to the music industry.
Right.
And we wanted to find a mix. We wanted to treat, well, first off, I wanted to treat being in a band or wanting to be a musician like you were a startup. And you aren't. You got to take it seriously. You have to do business,
right,
to actually pay your bills.
Absolutely.
And eventually you will get older.
Yeah.
And you won't want to drive around in a stinky van with like seven people.
Yeah.
And go to shitty towns that no one really wanted to go to anyway.
For sure.
And, you know, it's like, so eventually you have to do something with it. So we encourage people to kind of get into that. It basically gets handed over to Joel for quite a bit. They've been touring successfully for 21 years.
Wow.
Or 20, I don't know, a long ass time, like 2,500 shows. This guy's just sold like 25, 27,000 tickets at Red Rocks over 3 days. You're doing all right.
Yeah.
You're doing all right. So,
you know, this is kind of a side note to that, but a funny story. I just watched on Amazon. Now I'm going to really, people are going to think, who is this geek who's on the thing? I just watched the documentary about the Jonas Brothers on Amazon. Very, very interesting. Those guys had to transform their business. They got dropped from labels. They were touring band before they became the Disney stars, you know?
Yeah.
So it's,
they're coming back.
They are totally coming
back. They're coming back to town. Maybe I'll take you.
We should go.
I have tickets. We have the full scale suite.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. You know, I was impressed. I didn't realize. And I think about Malcolm Gladwell's, you know, thing, 10,000 hours. If you want to be good at anything, you put your 10,000 hours in. You watch a documentary like that. People think, you know, what's that they say? You know, they were the overnight sensation that took 13 years. You know, I mean, it's.
Well, that's the thing that we allude to in the book as well. Like, so much of what people think happened like overnight never did.
Yeah.
You got to grind.
Oh,
I mean, it's not like, I mean, oh, sure. Someone somewhere sometimes at once was playing in a coffee shop and the right person walked by and was like, that's a star.
Yep.
And then the other 99.99999% of people had to grind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, so, you know, when I worked at Roland, we were talking about this before we started recording, like you and I both know a ton of uber talented musicians,
crazy people,
that never perform or don't in front of large crowds.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. It's just difficult.
I would always go to the NAMM show. The other thing that blew my mind
is, and by the way, we're not allowed to undefine acronyms. So NAMM.
Okay. NAMM is called the
North American. Is that North American or National Association of Music Merchants?
That's what it is. Yeah. That's basically the worldwide thing for the music industry. And
so for those of you listening, the big one is in Anaheim or somewhere in Southern California. And the company I used to work for, Roland, when I worked there, our booth was an acre.
Yeah.
That's the size of a football field, people.
Yeah. It's 100,000. I think they had 110,000 people at that convention this year. It's second to like the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas.
I hated it, dude.
And
that was a lot of work for me.
Oh, that's a ton of work.
I wasn't like you, just walking around and buying stuff. And then
I could get out of the
sound. And dealing with people like me, I was like, oh my God, NAMM.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best part of NAMM was that it was in. I at the time I lived in Indiana and I got to go, and it's in January.
Right.
I actually got to go to Southern California for 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome.
Ridiculous though.
Yeah. So, it's cool. The thing I always love too is just seeing people that invented a new instrument.
Yeah.
Like something that never existed. You see this guy playing, you know, a thing that looked like a stand up string bass. It's got 12 different strings and it's a violin, viola, cello, bass all in one. And then you start going, okay, well, where's the market for that? You know, we got it.
So. I used to say that throughout most of the Roland booth.
Yeah.
Like I remember one year they debuted the V or the virtual accordion. I'm like, wow. And they had this dude that was like there by the entrance that we needed to walk by to go to where we would sit down with our clients. So I heard this dude play this thing for a week or a long time. Beep, 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 beep. That accordion.
Yeah.
But yeah, there, and you know, and, but I do want to thank Roland for continuing to make the keytar awesome.
Yeah. Do you ever have products in the booth that, you know, they're out there and they're like, guys, go push this thing, push this turd. And you just knew it wasn't going to work. Yeah. And then they never even came to market. You know,
no, not really. Cause Roland's like really like good about not putting stuff out that like, I mean, I never got warranty claims. I mean, it was like they were really, really good about that. Like, I mean, probably, and by the way, I have no vested interest in touting their wares, but probably industry leading in that regard.
Oh, like, for sure.
Their failure rate was like 0.1%. And if it didn't happen like right away, it almost never did.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally people wear stuff out. So anyway, okay. So we just pretty much got down to the fact that music changed. And you know what I was, what, and in the book, we allude to the fact, like, if you're not ready to, like, the industry's changed, you either need to do like a gazillion downloads,
right,
which is really hard to do,
right,
or you got to bring the heat live.
Yeah.
And that's tough to do.
Yeah.
For some people, because some of these people in the past were very much made in the studio.
Oh, for sure.
They don't think that the people that you love to listen to. I went and saw New Kids on the Block when they came to Kansas City.
Yeah.
I had tickets, man.
That's awesome. Hey, I just talked about the Jonas Brothers. So,
it was freaking terrible.
We don't judge.
It was not good. It was not good because they weren't ever really that talented.
Right.
They were created by a record label.
Right.
We thought they were cool. It was easier to do then, but you can't fake it.
Yeah.
On stage. Like, that's something you can't get through.
For sure. So, yeah. A lot of people have failed that way, you know, because it's, you know, once it's kind of like owning a retail place, like, you only got one shot when that person comes in the door. If you suck, they're not coming back.
Yeah. And by the way, you talked about 10,000 hours, so I'm like 9,800 hours away from being good at podcasting.
So this is the one that pushes you over the edge.
No.
We only got to do 200 hours, and I'm there with you.
I've got to do literally 9,000. I'm writing this down. Let me do the math. 9,800. Yeah, I got a long way to go.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I'm here for you.
Around episode 10,000, people stick around because it's going to get good. Yeah. Okay, so music industry changed, like all of it, which is crazy. Now, 12 years ago, I quit. I saw it, man. Like, I'm not trying to act like my crystal ball was finely tuned, but I could just tell, man. I could tell things were changing.
Yeah.
Like, it was just not. Now, I also kind of left right around the time that what we refer to as the housing bubble, 2008, 2009. Right. I could see it changing.
Oh, that was a brutal time.
It was really tough. And I could, you know, I was in the piano business at that time. And a lot of those purchases were driven by home equity.
Yeah.
You know, like someone went from one house to another and all of a sudden they've got this huge sum, this big pile of cash. And like, oh, yeah, I've always wanted a grand piano.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I saw it change and I also hated it.
Yeah.
Like, quite honestly, I love the people that I worked with. The last job I had before Roland was with a Yamaha. Mm-hmm. I opened a chain of Yamaha piano stores in DC.
Wow.
Which I was excited because there was a high volume there, which meant if three customers came in your store in a day, that was really busy.
Yeah.
Not well suited for my personality type. So I was ready to get out of it. And I thought Roland would be a good fit. And then I was traveling.
Yeah.
And I hated it. And I did that for like 2 years and then I was done.
Yeah. Those reps are road warriors. Man.
Oh man. I don't know how they do
it.
A
lot of miles.
I don't know how they do it. But as I, through those couple of years, I was really seeing things changing. I was going to the internet.
Yeah.
Was really taking over at this point. Now, the internet had been out for a while, but I was, you know, all right. So it was my job to call on our dealers and I covered 13 states.
Dude. Wow. Yeah.
My dealer list was like over 400 long.
Wow.
And it was changing so quickly that Roland was like, okay, here's your list. Now, the guy that worked here before you, he wasn't probably getting out. So they were literally like, can you go see if these places are even there? Like, they didn't say that word for word, but I went to go. I was like, all right, man, you know, I was single.
Yeah.
I was excited about the job. I didn't have anything really calling me. So I set out and I drove around and like, sure shit, like probably 10% of them were not there.
Oh, we've had, God, I mean, I couldn't even count how many have been since I've been around.
Just before I got there and there wasn't much left.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know, you pull up in some of these towns and you're like, oh man, how is anyone here? And like, and the effects of this financial crisis were, I mean, I was in the Midwest, like Detroit was my territory, like Detroit, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, like the whole entire area, like not only was housing blowing up, the auto industry was failing. Detroit actually shrank both years. Like, do you know how hard it is for a major metro area to shrink? Detroit did it.
I can't even imagine how to
so
do that.
So anyway, I watched it change. I could tell, but I would go around to these stores and you know, I'd say, hey, what's up? And they were like, oh, I can just really tell this is changing. And I would say, and I was in my early 30s at the time. And I was like, well, what are you doing to change with it? And they're like, oh, We've seen this occur before. We're going to have a sale this weekend. We're going to do something. I'm sitting there thinking
now you need to be thinking bigger.
You're
than
not
that.
Adapting. You're not doing things. And I'm like, and here I am younger. And a lot of these folks were, well, they were like your age now and they're probably they're retired now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, I'm like, well, what are you doing to adapt to the modern marketplace? Do you have a website? And they're like, oh, we don't need a website. We got the Yellow Pages. I'm like, cool. Yeah. Where is that? Do you have it? And you're like looking over at the counter and there's a girl on the internet, like looking for something, and there's no Yellow Pages. Like that tells you something.
Or they say Yellow Pages has got this new thing. They tell me they're doing search for me. They're doing that search thing, you know?
Sure. With that, the marketing and advertising were changing. And, it was not uncommon to buy a half a page of a newspaper on a Sunday, and that was going to drive some traffic, and you do all this stuff, and and then all of a sudden it doesn't work.
I remember doing, I think, a quarter page just in the Kansas City Star. It was about 14,000 for a weekend.
What do you think it was like in DC?
Oh, I can't even imagine. And you know, you start thinking about the break even that you got to do in volume to make that up.
Now, in the piano business, there was a high margin, and it was expensive. But at the same time, what really changed that industry was, well, the internet connected markets. It made it a lot easier to figure out who sold these products like three cities over.
Yep.
And while you were supposed to stay in your own yard, no one did.
Right.
And they didn't do that on any of this stuff. So there was always like someone in the middle of the state that would just, hey, whatever price, I'll beat it.
They're just trying to get moves.
I'll beat it. So people are calling from like Raleigh, North Carolina, and they're in the middle of like a tobacco field. Like, sure, we'll deliver there. Yeah, we'll pick up the check when you get there. You don't need to come in.
There's a lot of that going on, and it really, really changed.
And so one of the things that I think really changed that affected the musical instrument business was easy access. Well, first off, the internet made it easy for me to go online, buy something from Guitar Center. And Guitar Center, who's now really struggling. But at the time, were really dominant. They had a catalog business, they had an internet business, and they had a shitload of stores.
Yeah,
and they pushed. It was easy for me to buy a $50 item. Now, most people don't really aren't going to buy like a $2,000 guitar.
Yeah,
online.
Yeah,
I mean, some people will, but most people won't. They might want to play that, but all the other stuff that goes with it, no problem.
Yeah, we operate in a weird world where that high-end stuff, they still want to touch it, feel it, play it, hear it, you know.
But like I would struggle to buy a car.
Yeah.
If I had driven like the exact model of it, maybe, but if I hadn't, I would struggle to spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And music is something that people are passionate about, and a musical instrument is an extension of your passion for making music. So you like, well, have you ever like, you're like, oh, wow, I really want that guitar, and then you play it, and you're like, nope.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, immediately, for me, that was pianos. You know, you sit down and it could be the most expensive piano on the planet, but if I didn't like the way it felt, if I couldn't get out of it what I wanted, then it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So
you could buy stuff online. It made and was easy to ship.
Right.
And it things weren't always that easy to ship.
No.
You'd like buy something online and it'd be there like 3 weeks later.
You know what's crazy?
It'd be like, plus shipping and handling.
We still face that in with manufacturers. Like they can distribute through places, and there's a lot of times that we're like going, well, wait a minute, I could sign online and I can have that in a day.
Yeah.
But it's taking 2 weeks for me to get it.
Yep.
So we fight a double-sided fight in that we fight the change in the internet, the way people want to shop, their shopping patterns, but we're also finding that a lot of times manufacturers are only worried about moving product and they're not really invested in trying to get me the stuff faster that I need. So it's an uphill battle for sure, man. You really gotta.
Well, Amazon changed that.
They did
quite a bit. So, all right. So I look back in 2009. That's when I started the business that kind of became everything we did now. And I remember at the time I had quit my job at Roland and had gone back to school and I was looking for something to do. And I was thinking, I was like, no matter what, I'm not doing retail.
Right.
Says the guy. You know why I say that?
Of course I do.
Because you're stuck.
I am stuck.
You're stuck. You're tied to the fucking store.
I am stuck.
And by the way, that's the only way you can say it. I'm tied to the effing store.
Yeah, I've tried to. That's one thing I really had to work hard at. And luckily, technology has made. We have invested as a company, and so that I'm not as stuck as I once was.
Right.
But the truth is, I'm envious of some people who can help take a laptop and go wherever they want and work and just be just as productive as they could because they're not selling a physical product.
So we ended up spending, I kind of stumbled into a business, but we ended up going for music and I kind of stayed with it in a way because it turned into event tickets.
Yeah.
And as that was kind of an accidental business, but after about a year, we realized it was going to be something. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, I was like, do we need to open a store? That's awesome. I remember looking, I was like, no, there's no way. Yeah. Like, why do you need, like, everything was trending towards digital.
Yeah.
And at the time, like, PDF or e-tickets, like, yeah. Now, I mean, what's a ticket? When's the last time you held like a legit ticket stub?
Absolutely.
It's been a while.
Well, I mean, look at it. I mean, just even in our business, like the vast majority of my customers that are online customers are happening between 6 and 9 a.m., 6 and 8 a.m., and between 9 p.m. and 2 in the morning. Now, what do those two things for me have in common? Kid gets home from school, they're having dinner, and they're like, oh, I got to have this tomorrow. Yep. And so they can go on and get it. So, and then, 6 to 8 a.m. in the morning, guess what? They're up for breakfast and they're going, oh, mom, did you get my, So we're really lucky we adapted to that. And so we have this whole thing going on when we're not there anymore. So I kind of work in both worlds. We've got an e-commerce side. We also have the brick and mortar side. And I think they complement each other because I do think there's that place where the customer still wants to be able to go back. But if you're not in both spaces, if you're just in retail it's brutal.
Well, and that was one of the things. So, we were talking about like where it started falling apart. Well, all right. So I used to work for a company called Brook Mays Music, which Brook Mays Music was an amalgamation of like five chains,
right?
That was purchased by a private equity company, and then they put them all together because the musical instrument industry was remarkably fragmented.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that did not work towards its advantage when it came to evolving, because Now it's the same thing. Like, you look at all these things that are fragmented, and by fragmented meaning there's not a consistent anything. Yeah. Guitar Center and Sam Ash?
Yeah. So Thoroughbred down in Florida.
Yeah, but the thing is if you're not number one or number two, you're screwed.
Right.
So now these little ma and pa shops everywhere, they're like, oh, well, we don't have the budget to innovate, or we don't know what we're doing, or we're just like used to people just kind of coming and bringing us money. So that changed. But one of the things that was I still see as being somewhat stable is the band and orchestra instruments. Yeah. And your company, what's your website? Let's throw that
MeyerMusic.com is our website.
And that's M-E-Y-E-R.
Yeah, M-U-S-I-C.com. We're one of the lucky ones setting over Thanksgiving dinner in 19, probably 89 or 90-ish, when it first started coming, we got it. And we were really lucky.
But that wasn't lucky.
That was,
You were taking a chance at the time. You were doing something
absolutely
that other people weren't doing.
Yeah. One of the things that you just said is like mom and pa stores will say, well, we don't have the money to innovate. You know what? You don't have the money not to innovate.
Right.
Like, you've got to find the money to innovate. And
if you're not going to, then put your money in your pocket and close.
Yeah.
And for sure. I saw some people do that. I actually did. I saw some of my accounts. They said, like, they were savvy business people. And they said, you know what? I'm not going to be able to keep up. I'm shutting this down before I lose my ass.
Yep.
And they did. And now they do something else. I don't know what they do.
Yeah,
they did something different, or they gravitated towards strengths. So band and orchestra rentals is a huge part of your business.
Yeah,
like, you deal with like how many school districts?
We work with about 60 school districts in about 100-mile area around the city. So we've got guys going out into all kinds of remote places. And when I started, we just did a one school district and rented a couple hundred instruments a year. And now it's a substantially bigger piece of the pie than that. But it came because we did two things, I think. One is we did invest in innovation. We were the first company in Kansas City to do online instrument rental. And this is like probably 10 plus years ago. We were the first company. As we designed our website, we were looking at companies like Amazon and incorporated one-click technology into our website, so that
while the seasoned musician doesn't want to buy an instrument that they haven't played,
right,
the parent of a fourth grader doesn't give a shit.
Right.
They just want a trumpet. They want that. And I used to work at these stores. They come in, like, you want to talk about dooming your child. They'd come in and you've heard it, man, this kid's going to quit. They're going to quit. I'll be surprised if they still play in a month. What's the cheapest? And I used to tell these parents, I'm like, look, if you give this kid the dumpiest, worst sounding, hardest to play, lamest, no self-esteem building instrument,
you're dooming him.
Just don't even rent it.
Right.
Just like sign him up for something else.
Right.
Because you're screwed. It's like the parents that would come in and they'd want to buy a guitar for like a fifth grader or like an 8-year-old. And then I'd be like, you need a tuner and something, oh, I want to see if he sticks with it first. Yeah. Well, if it's never in tune,
yeah, they're not,
you're not going to have a guitar player.
Yeah. You know, we found honestly that more than anything, just ease. Like making the process easy.
Well, with band and orchestra, you mentioned something. You're like, we have guys that are going in all the cardinal directions. Right. They come to the schools. They have meetings. They sit down. They turn they turn out a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
But with it, you've got a different problem that most people probably aren't aware of, is you have to upkeep those instruments.
Right.
And it's, I mean, how it's many people capital. Do you, well, you would answer this question, but those of you listening, how many of you know someone that can repair a clarinet?
Yeah.
Or a flute when all the pads fall off?
Yeah. We're struggling the same stuff that the trade industries are struggling. Well,
that's my point.
Trying to find those people.
That's why my business, and check us out at fullscale.io. Like, there's a huge shortage of software developers because we didn't train them 20 years ago. So they're not ready now.
Right. No, we have inadvertently made it seem like that's not really a great job to have. You need to be a tech guy, or you have to do this. And you know, programming, I mean, those guys that were sitting in the room and just everybody thought, he's just a nerd sitting in a room. Well, they're super sought after.
That guy's doing pretty well right now.
He's doing okay. Yeah. In our world, like now, they're going, hey, do you realize repairing, you know, AC and heating units or fixing music instruments, you can make a nice living. I mean, we got people that make a lot of money that work for us doing that stuff.
I mean, a lot, because there are riches in the niches.
Yep.
Yeah. So figure out how to do something that no one else does and then go get really good at it.
That's a
really
great point.
You'll probably be all right.
So, that's a really great point. Find the niches and find the places. You know, as we were talking before we came on air here a little bit, like it's very easy to feel like in today's e-commerce world that like you got to do everything, like, right? Because you got to be like Amazon. You got to do everything. If
or just get really good at one thing.
Yeah. Make that funnel smaller and find that thing and do it well. You know, because there are cracks in there where you can fit and do really well. And
so the band and orchestra stuff is something that you gravitated towards, I'm assuming.
You know, I gravitated towards selling and moving product and seeing the difference in trends. The big thing
you have to sell stuff to actually stay in business?
You do have to sell stuff. The thing that was the most important for me was that I could see, you know, you talked about seeing the industry change. I could see the industry changing too. And the industry was changing from this. We didn't want to own anything anymore. People don't want to own anything. They're very happy to make payments on things. Yeah. I told my son, I said,
that means you can rent
genius.
The same trumpet for like 20 years.
Yeah, it's great. Maybe. But think
eventually
about this.
You will own it after like 900 payments, right?
Think about this though.
Is that
what is, maybe you know, 888, something like that. But you know,
hang on. I'm doing the math on that too.
Yeah. I'll write that down. What are they doing when you're streaming music? You're renting the music.
Yeah.
People don't want to go out and buy all that stuff and have it clogging up their thing. Even, you know, downloading it now, like kids, we don't think about that, but kids don't want to clutter up their device with 50 million things when they could just pick from everything and rent it.
You also have an attention span that's about 8 seconds long if you're doing well. So then those rentals also turn into a really nice feeder program to the ones that actually make it when it's time to buy something cool. Because I'm assuming that your company, much like the ones I used to work for, will apply some of that rent.
We do.
Towards buying a nicer instrument at that point. So I played the tuba.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like when you come in.
I was once in the Kansas State Honor Band for the tuba.
Well, that's impressive.
You want to know why?
Not a lot of people can say that.
You know why I played the tuba? Because I was the only kid that could carry it home.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that.
I always think it's funny when the mom comes in.
I actually started on the baritone. I started on the baritone.
Yeah.
But I quit at the end of eighth grade because I went to a high school that didn't have a band. And I probably would have kept playing anyway.
Yeah.
That was it.
You've landed on your feet. You've done okay.
It's not because of my skill as a musician. I do have the voice of an angel, and I demonstrate that sometimes when we play mixtape, which is what we should probably do right now.
Absolutely.
So for those of you, you know mixtape, right?
I know mixtape. I listened earlier.
Oh man.
You're going to hit me with something. Let's I got to come up with an answer for real quick.
I gotta like throw the cards away after this is why I'm ready for the app.
So how long before mixtape the game is like out, or is it out? Can you get it?
I played it.
The card?
No, you can't. You can buy the card game at mixtapethegame.com.
But you're coming out with an
app. Yeah, I played it on my phone. We're working out the bugs. We're making it every bit as awesome as it deserves.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to read a scenario and we will name a song. This is a weird one. There's a 50-year storm. Which, if you don't know what that means, it's huge. It's like the kind of storm that only occurs every 50 years, mm-hmm. unless you are in our current climate. And then it's like every other week.
Yeah.
Just remember that. Just waiting for your set. You're paddling out to what song on your surfboard?
Well, I think it would be Christopher Cross Sailing, wouldn't you think?
Maybe. I'm thinking about Wipeout.
That would be what I'd be hoping I wouldn't do, but yeah,
now
maybe.
Now here's the thing is we have to resolve to tie because we can't vote for each other. So we're both winners.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are both winners. Unlike 70% of piano stores that were once in business, which are not. And that's what I want to talk about is what made people actually survive. We talked about a lot of different things. Talked about your ability to change, your ability to adapt. We went through some of that. So what part of, record stores led the charge.
Yeah.
They were gone first.
Yeah.
They were gone. So that presented other issues. So you look and it was a weird trickle down effect because first off, the actual record store started disappearing.
Right.
And then you had stores like Best Buy that had designated very large footprints within their retail environment, not only to CDs or tapes or whatever, but also to DVDs.
Yeah.
And that created a whole ripple effect. Like Best Buy was really, really struggling for a long time because they had these massive stores that they were used to selling these things and now they weren't.
Absolutely. Well,
were they missing the sales, now they had to pay the rent on empty floor space.
It's huge. And think about if you're just a store, it's a good lesson. What think about going into a record store. How many other products besides records did they actually sell?
Dude, when was the last time you went in a record store? Because it was like 90.
Exactly.
Like 93, 94-ish. You
know, I think diversification.
Maybe a little bit past that.
They could have done. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and they looked at a lot of different stuff. Like I remember Best Buy actually talked to Roland about selling musical instruments at one point, but they had all these funky dealer agreements with companies.
Best Buy did
like
that.
Yours. Well, they tried. They didn't do it everywhere because they just had these weird agreements and stuff that they didn't, I don't know. Those companies don't really, they're not super agile. So the music stores went out and then obviously we talked about piano stores gone.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot of them are gone.
Fine. I mean, I read an article a few years ago and at the time it was 65% of them are gone.
Yeah.
And then the ones that still exist are dramatically smaller.
For sure.
They sell less stuff.
Well, back to the record store. What's the one key thing that's the same? That's pretty much all they did.
Yeah.
Those stores that are gone, that's all they did. They put all their eggs in that one basket. And when it went south, they were screwed.
But at the same time, those same stores that I would go to, they had some golden years too.
Oh yeah. It's like the fur coat industry.
Yeah. You know? Oh man, how's that doing? It's not they're right next to the piano store.
I'm telling you what, they face.
I didn't even
think
about that one.
Well, it's just a changing. It's like, what do people find valuable today?
Yeah.
It used to be they thought wearing a fur coat was valuable. Now it's not. They used to think, hey, if you have a piano in your home, it's a status symbol. It means you've made it. You're wealthy. You have that grand piano, the thing, and all the people come in.
Now you can still do that.
Now what is it though? It's the 85-inch plasma, or flat screen, whatever it is.
Well, some of them were. Some of them did okay, and then some of those companies are in a little bit of shit right now because they were literally building their pitch around what a great investment this is.
Oh yeah, they're
people come into the piano stores and they'd be like, "Is this going to hold its value?" And I'd be like, "No."
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? The guy over at the other store told me it would. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. It was.
What do you buy that holds its value that isn't an equity in a company that may actually appreciate?
Yeah, that was.
Or Beanie Babies.
A big pitch.
Beanie Babies.
Beanie Babies.
Those are good ones, too.
That's what I think Guitar Center is struggling with right now. Guitar Center would be a little bit like the Beanie Baby.
Fortunately, about 25 years ago, I shifted most of my assets over to Beanie Babies. And also Pokemon cards.
Wow.
So
I'm sure it's
I'm doing
come
pretty
around.
Well. I'm doing well.
Yeah.
My lifestyle is not from being a startup founder. It's that.
You may land on your side and rather than your feet on that one. I'm not sure, but we'll see.
Yeah. And then I rolled it all into Bitcoin right before it blew up. So now I have to do this podcast.
Yeah.
Which I don't get paid to do. So I got a lot of shit.
I mean, I'm not getting paid to be here?
No, man.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you are actually
what
here.
Am I?
Here.
Okay.
You get 1,000 Supreme dollars.
I get the Supreme dollar. I heard about these. Yeah, I never thought I'd own one.
You can spend those at your charity event on Friday.
Absolutely.
Which I don't know if this is going to come out before then, but you actually have a really cool charity called Band of Angels.
We do. Yeah. one of the other things we started.
And you figured out what to do with some of these musical instruments that people sometimes don't want. You make them into art.
We make them into art. We have a big art auction called Art That Blows.
I love
that. And it's one of those edgy things. I thought, oh boy, how are people going to take this? But man, it's fifth year. It's blowing up. We're doing some amazing things. I got to give a shout out to our friend Aaron James at Lillian James Creative, at Lillian James, who's done a great job of helping us with it. We're going to have a huge crowd this year. We're going to have like 750 people at this thing.
Yeah, she's been a guest. So. She's a star. She's an alumnus.
She's a hustler.
She is. I was exchanging some messages with her earlier. She was asking me if she was trying to get me to go.
Okay.
But my other sometimes co-host, Andrew Morgan, had beat her to it.
That's right. Yeah.
Did you see my name on the list? Did you mention that?
I think I did. Yeah.
Maybe I did. I don't know. We'll but anyway, see. It's cool. You know, music's an important part of a lot of people's lives. And even though it's changed, I think it's crucial. You know, there's a lot of studies that just flat out prove that kids that do music do a little better, especially at math and science.
That's one thing that really has never changed. I mean, that part of the brain is stimulated.
It's spatial reasoning, and it's also just something different, you know. I mean, all right. So the internet changed. People failed to update. Excuse me. I've been my voice that is like an angel has been.
Sometimes you gotta
rest it. It's been threatened. Yeah.
You gotta rest it.
Yeah, Daryl. My coworker gave me some strange, weird virus. He gave it to all of us at work. So we'd like to thank you for that, Daryl.
I thought it was because you were singing Whitney Houston at the top of your voice when I walked in.
I can.
Yeah.
I can. I don't want people to think that she died, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Is it too soon to talk about her?
Maybe. Anyway, moving on.
So where was the worst? Speaking of death and things dying too soon. So I mean, I think that, so what is still out there? I mean, there are still music stores. You can still go buy, but Guitar Center, who is a publicly traded company, is probably going to go bankrupt. Well, or they already did.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens with them.
And now they're affected with, they have different problems. They have Amazon problems now.
They sure do. They know, it was a distribution channel that they thought they owned. They own Woodwind and Brasswind. They own music123.com. They invested heavily in those people. Yeah. But,
and some of those were your competitors for band and orchestra stuff.
Yeah, I've been through all of those.
Could we have got the trumpet for 887 payments there?
Probably.
Hang on, I'm doing the math. That's one less payment.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's...
I bet you adapted and went 886.
We would.
I like it.
We want to make it easy on you, Matt. It's Guitar Center definitely has got... I mean, they got an uphill battle. That's another lesson in this whole thing is like, it's, you know, you cannot stop grinding. There is somebody right there on your butt all the time trying to make you, if you're not trying to think 3-4 years in the future and see what's going on and start investing in that now, you got a problem. And that's, I've been very blessed because we were in a situation like that where, yes, I'm a second generation in a business, but the first generation didn't stand in my way.
Second generation in a business, your chances of success are like way low.
I know, but
way low. You know why though? Because you're not your dad.
That's true.
You don't the kids that inherit the business often inherit it. Well, you told me the story and it was kind of funny. You're like, oh, well, maybe I'll come work here. And the next thing you know, it's like 25 years later. Right. And you're like, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I got laid off from two jobs within 8 months right before I decided to swallow my pride, come back home, work in the mall store for my mom in a piano store.
Let's add that to the list of things that have died. You know, the mall.
Well, hey, we were in that for 25 years and we saw the handwriting on the wall. Yeah. You saw the traffic's not down. Now, if you wanted to, you know, market strictly to walking, you know, retirees, for 7 of the 12 hours you were there.
We're spotting a pattern here. Things that are big and bloated and heavy and difficult to turn. So I've always, you know, you go back to the model. We talked all the way at the beginning of this about the ticket business. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, we're never having an office because this is all going online. I said, we have to be able to pick this business up and go wherever we want, whenever we want. If we can't move to St. Thomas, like the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas, with this business within a day or two, it's the wrong business. And I've kind of stuck with that.
Yeah. You have to be able to help the customer when the customer wants to be helped. That's the bottom line in all this. When I want what I want it when I want it. And you've got to be able to do that. So whatever business you're going to do from wherever location you're going to do it, you've got to be able to do that. That's the one thing in business that has not changed. If you don't deliver the experience that you promise, then you're screwed.
But sometimes the experience is no experience at all.
Yep.
And meaning like, okay, so, you know, I talk to people and I'm the founder of gigabook.com and people use it to book appointments online. Mm-hmm. Can like put it on your website and as a dog walker and all of a sudden you can take online appointments. And when we first started building this 5 years ago, people are like, well, I don't want to do that because people value my interaction. And I'd be like, no, they don't.
No.
No, they don't. They don't want to talk to you at all. Actually, they want to be able to take 2 seconds, pick a time that works for them, click a button. And what? And now, you know, online booking is so common because it's just easier.
Absolutely.
Like, here's the schedule. Pick a time. You did it to book. Well, no, we actually exchange way too many text messages because we're too old musical instrument.
That's
retail
right.
guys. So why would we
New Kids on the Block.
Hey, those,
I
gifted those, bro. I gifted those. But you know, we talk about things that need to be easily adaptable, and you know, in the world of software and startups, the word agile,
right,
but sometimes the experience does matter. Like for example, and we'll go back to like renting a band instrument. Mm-hmm. Dude, I would know what to buy or rent. But I worked in the industry for almost a decade. Most
right.
people have no clue.
Yeah, no, that's
they're
what
like,
we do.
They come home and they're like, hey, my kid said that he needs a flute.
Yeah. My job is to know what you need before you walk in my front door.
Right.
For that school. And we're right now just rolled out, actually just launched. We've been in soft launch for the last 2 weeks, but we just launched today. Working with our, I was listening to your podcast with Zach Pettit the other day.
I'm sorry.
It was good. He talked about APIs and does anybody know what an API is? We actually know what an API is at Meyer Music. We integrated our website with a retail experience and moved everything from paper to tablets. And so we're seeing that trend. It's the customer experience. It's what people expect when they come in, you know, and if you're not doing that, then you know, people get it real quick and they're like, eh.
Well, and God forbid this ever happened to anybody listening. Your kid comes home and says, Mom, Dad, I want to play the oboe.
Yeah.
Which brings me to so I'm going to tell my music jokes now.
Okay.
I've got a couple of them. And if you are thinking about turning this off, don't, because this is worth the wait.
These are going to be good.
They are actually. So, and I'll try to remember them. Do you know what the definition of perfect pitch is?
No, Matt. What is the definition of perfect pitch?
It is a banjo flying out a second story window.
That's right.
Same joke works for oboes, bassoons, a kazoo, things I often refer to as tolerance instruments, meaning you only have a given amount of tolerance for listening to that play.
Yeah.
But no, your kid comes home and says, I need to play an oboe. Like, who knows anything about an oboe?
Right.
And much less what that is, what you need or whatever. And that's where the experience then matters.
Right.
And that's something that Amazon cannot provide.
Yep.
But in some ways, I could probably go to YouTube and maybe figure out what I need to know about an oboe. Doesn't mean I'm going to, but I might.
They are. Where we compete with Amazon is a couple of areas. One is the what we call an ISO, and that is an instrument-shaped object. You know, people think that it's $49. Yeah. Wow. It must be awesome. And I can get it on here. And it doesn't matter whether it's Amazon or any other big box retailer or whatever. There's differences in the product for sure.
Oh, so, like they fall apart.
You know, so that's where our opinion is that, you know, we've got to help educate. So I think education has to be a part of your business.
Just don't send a letter out to all the band.
Yeah. Don't do that. And
by the way, that's actually what crumbled the company that I used to work for because
got sued.
Feeling unusual amounts of pressure from things like Costco and Sam's Club, who were now, so the company used to work for Brooke Mays, got sued by a company called First Act.
Right.
And First Act was selling instruments in these discount clubs, and it was making people not rent instruments. And the CEO sent out a letter basically to the effect, I mean, taped to the counters, they were sent out to people, and they basically defamed this company and said, okay, look, you
and
can
he
go,
stated it as fact.
It said, you can buy this stuff, but it will, we cannot guarantee or service any of it because they are of such poor quality that they will not hold the repair long enough for us to give you your 6-month guarantee. They got sued for $19 million or $20 million and lost.
Yep.
They appealed, they gave them about $100,000 off.
Yeah.
And at that point, the private equity company
just liquidated.
It liquidated it because it was cheaper than paying it off.
Yep.
And
well, he stated it as fact, and that's a really great lesson. You know, that can be your opinion. That's
but
one
those
thing.
Were those instrument shaped objects.
Stated as fact.
Yeah, and you can't, and you know, there's just things you can't do. And by the way, that was when I left. That I after they had lost that judgment, it took me 4 months.
Yeah,
I knew that company was going to fail because I mean, dude, $20 million, we weren't that big.
Yeah. It was good for me. I went in and bought all their stuff.
I bet. Everyone else did. Man, you want to talk about on my way out,
those
were some of the weirdest like moments. So I was a district manager for this company, and I was in charge of a section within 17 stores. It's called a zone manager. Mm-hmm. And I actually had to go to a couple of these stores because they were shutting them down in tranches, meaning like three at a time. Yeah. So they'd go, we'd go in and these liquidator people who are like the coldest.
They're like carnival people.
They have, well, they are just like, well, and you know, here's the thing is like, I could probably do this because it's just like reality.
Right.
But they'd come in and, you know, they'd say, okay, so the store is closing. None of you are going to have jobs here within 60 days.
Wow.
So here you are with like 15 people, some of which have worked for these stores for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And some of them would just get up and leave at that point.
Yeah.
And I went to like three or four of these. So some people just got up and they just left.
Yep.
Like literally, like upon that, stood up, walked out the door, have no idea what happened with it. Yep. So then there's these people still deer in the headlights and they'd be like, well, what's going to happen to Joe, our district manager? District manager is a forward thinking term. This company has no future and will not exist.
Joe is working somewhere else.
And then someone would start crying.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just like, it was just like, and they're like, so we are going to be here in 30 days. We're going to liquidate everything in this store.
Yep.
And then we're going to fire half of you.
Yeah.
And then we're going to fire the other half. And then there's going to eventually be one person here that will turn the key on the door and you will never open it again.
I could not believe when I went into those stores when that was happening that those people stayed.
Yeah.
You know, and just hung in there with it.
Hey. But
it was.
And by the way, that was the message they got on the way to it. They were like, and like they would literally say, they're like, look, you don't have a future here.
Yep.
You eventually will get to a point where you don't have a job.
Right.
You don't have a paycheck. You should start looking for something else now.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think that they do that because they actually wanted you to quit because then they didn't have to pay you unemployment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And some other stuff, but whatever. So anyway, that was a very interesting thing. And, you know, when a company like, you know, the musical instrument business, even though you sell billions worth of stuff, it was still pretty small. Like that's not a ripple effect. Like I ended up, learning later, like that same chain, like, I mean, companies like that end up sometimes owing millions of dollars to, you know, just AR and just like, cause when the liquidators come in, they sell shit for 10, 20 cents on the dollar and they are not paying off the vendor.
I think
they are paying
Mays,
the other stuff.
I think Brooke Mays owed Yamaha $25 million.
I don't know what it was. And I don't even know if I should say, but I actually do know the amount with Roland. It wasn't that much, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I can only imagine how that affected over this last 10 to 15 years. How, I mean, they got stiffed on a lot of checks.
Oh, yeah.
On a lot of bills.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was difficult. And I learned a lot. A whole lot that was actually like really formative in my time as an entrepreneur. Cause I was in my late 20s at that point.
And so what's the biggest lesson? What'd you learn the most?
Well, you know, one of the things, well, some of it came, it actually formed some of my opinions about how to actually run a business because before they got sued, they were actually doing some things really well.
Right.
They took all these businesses that had 10 to 15 stores and they consolidated them with one central management unit. Mm-hmm. They centralized costs. And that was another thing too. On my first day with that company was the first day they were Brooke Mays and they were in the process of firing 20% of people.
Yeah.
So I got associated with the wagon train that came in to do that. It didn't really go over well for me until I had to disassociate myself with that. But
yeah.
And then all, you know, some of it too is like back to that big staying agile.
Yeah.
And you know, they didn't do it, but at the same time, like you got to operate with some smarts.
Well, I think, and then
you got to not do things that put
words.
You in a position of liability.
Yeah. You learn the term, in my opinion, you know, that is my opinion. And, and honestly, if the guy had used those three words, he probably would have been able to, if not get out of it, just not gotten what he got.
I mean, but what are you going to do?
But you get, sometimes you get owners too, who are so arrogant, for lack of a better word. You know,
well, that was another thing I learned. Actually, that's a good point, because a lot of these places that I would go around, you can't make business decisions with your ego.
Right.
And these people were, some of these people had built these like palatial stores.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, do you really need that?
Yeah.
Do you really need marble columns in here?
Yeah.
Like, people aren't like, yeah, I'm going to buy that. I wasn't going to buy it. But once I saw the marble columns, I was in. And that's just not, you know, so what are you going to do?
You know,
well, so we've already gone into overtime. I knew this was going to happen. I knew we were going to talk about stuff. Well, I get it. I get it.
The Backstreet Boys and the New Kids on the Block stuff. That's what threw it.
They went into overtime and the crowd went wild. You've been talking about the Backstreet Boys and New Kids on the Block a lot. What were you listening to on the way over here?
I don't know.
I know what you're going to listen to on the way home.
I guess so. Yeah.
So, you know, just to kind of like wrap up on some of that, like, you know, like, I mean, we talked about when the biggest changes that occurred, you know, so those that survived, so your company survived, it was through adaptation, by the way, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way. You don't have big palatial stores.
No,
your stores are modest, but presentable.
Right.
Like, and they're not like, you don't have like a 94,000 square foot mega center.
No, and I credit this really to my family and my mom and my dad, and you know, that we've grown very smart, you know, we kind of have a tale of a couple of different cities. If you go to the stores, cause we have the one in our, that's been around for 50 years. That's looks like it's been around for 50 years, but it works. And we've tried to keep it as functional as we can.
Dude, it just needs to be functional. That's it.
That's it. I mean, as long as the customer comes in and they're getting what they want.
Do you have flutes?
What they need. We do.
Do you have guitar strings?
We do.
Do you sell tuners?
We do sell tuners.
Do you sell some other stuff?
We sell some other
stuff. Okay. That's all I need.
Yep.
Like realistically, that's all I need. I don't need marble columns.
That's right.
You know, you don't need any of that stuff.
Well, I think at a certain point in today's world too, people, consumers, especially the millennial generation, the younger generation, they're looking at that stuff going, well, what are these guys really spending their money on?
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, you mentioned Band of Angels earlier. That's a charitable kind of component that came along as a great opportunity. You know, you need to be doing something that matters to you. You need to be doing something that has social responsibility and giving back, which we try and do. And then you need to be thinking forward. You know, we're already thinking. I told my brother the other day when we rolled out this project, I said, you know, God, this has been the hardest thing I've had to do, which is that API thing and integrate with the web and trying to bring it into a tablet situation. But if we do it, I said, that's going to put us, especially for our competitors and even the big ones that's owned by, you know, big companies. It's amazing. You do have, as a small business, agility. You do have the ability to move forward, and we're going to be in front of everybody.
And create a sense of efficiency.
You have to do that.
And a lot of that stuff. I'm a big advocate of that.
And think about
how some people that could help you integrate that API into the tablet and do some other stuff.
I figured you might know somebody to do that.
It's not me. Don't make me read from Baby Loves Coding. I was listening to the episode that I do occasionally listen to the podcast, and I was listening to the one today about innovative education. And I was like, oh, wow. I read from Baby Loves Coding, which has happened quite a bit.
Look, I started with Access for Dummies. People who don't know what Access is, that was the database platform from way back at Microsoft. Access for Dummies.
Is that even a thing anymore?
You know, I don't know. But that's, you know, I took the time to educate myself and start thinking about that stuff. But just think about how your customer wants to be. Think about how you don't open a business, or don't, if you're in a business, don't act like to a customer a way that you wouldn't want to be act like if they come to you, whether it's on the web or whether it's by the phone or whether, however it is. You know, I always tell our staff in the stores, you know, when that person comes in the door, what do you want when you walk into someplace? You just want eye contact.
One of the things that I always used to, so I was also the sales trainer at this chain. And then later, that's basically what I did with Roland. And I would go in these stores, and you get these guys that were like career musicians.
Yeah.
And like, here's some lady. She just wants like to buy a guitar for like her 7-year-old. And they're just like talking so far over the buyer's head.
Pick up the social cues, man.
I'm like, my God.
She's ready to go.
Like, you cannot use like every industry slang term that you have ever heard, because this lady does not know what you're talking about. Like, will my kid want to play this? Is there a reasonable chance that they'll succeed? Yeah. And is it within a price that I can afford?
Absolutely. It's
very, if that's the case, you have done your job. Quit talking about all the other stuff. And another thing that's terrible, people are in music stores are terrible at, is people don't want to sit there and listen to you perform.
That's
for
right.
Like an hour.
That's right.
They want to hear the instrument, but it's, you know, so some of that.
You got to be able to do a little bit. My mom was fantastic about that. She
I
really
can play like
job.
Two things on the piano, like brilliantly.
Yep.
Like you would think I was Elton John, and then the catalog is over, dude. It is done.
Well, that's all it takes.
And people in the stores would get shitty with me. They'd be like, dude, you gonna learn the other songs? I'm like, no, I'm gonna get really good at these two.
Well, how many times did you see somebody talk themselves or walk themselves right out of a sale because they would not shut up they would not just write it up and they wouldn't quit performing?
Do you like, want to go ahead and get this?
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
My mom had a great saying, just shut up and write, man.
Yeah.
Ask for the order, shut up and write.
My mom is quite wise.
She's very wise.
And she probably sold a lot of stuff
too.
She's
a power closer. Like, she
by the way, closing
anything.
A sale is not hard. You literally just say, do you want to go ahead and get this? What do you think?
Yeah.
Like, I have this theory that I could raise any organization's sales by 20% immediately if I could just get everyone to ask for the sale. We used to play that game in the store.
Ask early.
Like, it was about how many different things you could ask someone to buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's like, if you're buying a guitar, do you have picks? Do you have strings? Do you have a tuner? Like, all that stuff. And, like, sometimes people are like, well, do they really need that? I'm like, yeah, they do. Because I'd be pissed if I got home with my kid's new guitar and he starts turning the E string and poing.
Right.
And now I got to go all the way back down there and buy another freaking set of strings.
Yeah.
I got to put it on there. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Why didn't you sell me this the first time?
Instead of playing offense, you need to be playing offense.
So I'm going to tell I'm going to end this episode with the most amazing music jokes that you've ever heard.
I really can't wait.
So I know.
I cannot wait.
They're good. I saved the best ones for last.
Wait, this is why I agreed to what you're paying me for this.
And if you don't like the jokes, I will give you your money back.
Okay.
How many lead singers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I have no idea.
It just takes one. He needs to hold the light bulb and wait for the world to revolve around him.
Okay. Yeah, there is that.
I've got one more, and it's a lead guitarist joke.
Okay.
My friends who are like actual rock stars always get a kick out of this because I will often tell them this joke, and it's been so long since they've heard it, it's actually funny again.
Yeah.
And they usually fuck it up.
All right, here we go.
So how many lead guitarists does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I have no idea.
It takes seven. It takes one to actually screw in the light bulb and six to say, I could have done that better.
Yeah. There's always somebody's got it better.
And that's the same way computer programmers are like that as well. Yeah. Well, anyway, Mike, I thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And helping me relive my past, my dreams, my nightmares.
We covered a lot of ground. I don't know that I had all the answers that you were wanting, but this was fun.
I mean, who had the answers? Clearly very few.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I think we got into it, and you know, this was, you know, the thing is, it's kind of a recurring theme around Startup Hustle is so much of the stuff is applicable.
Absolutely.
Like all the stuff we just talked about. I don't care what you sell.
Yeah.
I don't care if you just opened a hemp store or if you sell, like we just had a soda company in here, like all these different kinds, these rules all apply.
Well, and let me just say this too. You and I were comparing stories of, you know, how many, you know, you went to the different colleges and your college experience and your, you know, your grade level or whatever, your smarts, but that doesn't have much to do with it. Cause if we compared ACT scores, you know, I mean, I'm like, I'm a 15 on the ACT.
I got bored, man. Hustle. I just started like writing
it down. Keep hustling and work your ass off.
I think the thing is also, if you can learn how to sell something, you're going to be all right.
Yep.
I've always told my wife that, like in thick and thin, you know, like, oh my God, is the business going to make it? I'm not too worried about it. Why not? Because I know how to sell stuff.
You know what? That's
I'll be
one
all right.
Thing my mom said, she's
I'll
like,
be
hey.
All right.
You'd have manufacturers come in and they'd say, well, you got to do this. You got to do this. She's like, hey, I'll sell whatever I got.
Yeah.
I don't need you.
Right.
You know, so you don't have to have the great, I mean, just sell. Keep hustling and sell.
You know what I'm ready to go do? I'm going to do an amazing rendition of Chopsticks. I'm going to make you listen.
Okay. I'm going to hit the restroom real quick before.
That's how people sneak out of the studio. See you next time, people.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Startup Hustle with Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit startuphustle.xyz. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on Startup Hustle.